Seder.
All right, so we are in the middle of learning about refuah on Shabbos. Last week we spoke about the question of taking medicine on Shabbos and the prohibition of taking medicine in a normal situation. We generally focused on people that are what we referred to as having a mechush bi'alma, a minor illness. Mm-hmm. We discussed just the basis for the general reason why you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos in most situations. We talked about the gzera because of grinding, shchikat sanmanim, that many medicines are made out of herbs that are crushed into a powder of some sort and made into medicines. So that's the general reason why we said the halacha practically is generally that all medicine is generally usur for people that are minorly ill. Okay, there are a lot of details which we're not getting to, and there will be some that we'll come back to later. We're not going to get to it this week, but we will come back at some point to vitamins and all sorts of interesting things like that, health stuff. We'll come back to that probably towards the end. For tonight, we're going to move on to the next level of illness, which is cholish ein bo sakana, which is basically one notch above mechush bi'alma. We said again, mechush bi'alma is generally usur. We discussed also in terms of what is included in medicine. We said that anything which is a regular food or an action or a cream or a lotion or anything which is normally taken or used by individuals that are not sick, we said the halacha is that it's fine to do. That we don't impose this concern about shchikat sanmanim in that situation. The main issue is for foods or pills or anything which is not usually taken by a regular person. Okay, that's basically what we said last time. Meaning somebody who's healthy would not necessarily be seen taking this type of pill or using this kind of cream, whatever it is. If you see somebody using it, you know that they're sick. So that's when we said that Isser applies to somebody who has a mechush bi'alma, to a minor illness. So we said based on that, you know, sucking candy if you have a sore throat, or a cup of tea, or hot soup, all those kind of things, which are regular things that anybody else would have eaten also, or used, then those things are fine. But things which are particularly designed for people that are sick, so that would be a problem. So that's what we did last week.
So just to clarify that normal foods...
It's fine. It's always fine.
Are always fine.
Yeah, normal foods are always fine, according to almost all poskim. That's definitely the halacha. And then we looked up in the Shmiras Shabbos Kolchoso, we see how that comes down. So now the question is, what is the status of somebody who's a little bit more ill than we spoke about last week? Somebody who's, again, he's not life-threatening sick, but or any way in danger, or potentially in danger, but his sickness is a little more severe. Okay, he's a little more seriously ill. So the halacha is, if you want to look, so we'll start with Mishnah Berurah. We'll go to the Shmiras Shabbos Kolchoso. The Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch say the following. If you can find, I only brought one Mishnah Berurah. Sorry, I have another Shmiras Shabbos here. So we're in Siman Shin Chaf Chet. That's the same one as last week. We're going to look at
I was getting confused. I looked there.
We're going to start with Sif Lam and Zion. Okay? Lam and Zion. We actually looked at part of this last week, but we're going to do the very last couple. Yeah. Top, yeah.
Lam and Zion. Lam and Chet. Lam and Tet. Lam and Zion. There we go.
Okay, you got it? Okay, so the first part we actually read last week, we're not going to read the whole thing again. The first part, basically, he just talks about the foods that are usually eaten by a healthy person. So that we're going to skip. He says, kolachol mashkim shem machal briim mutar. Regular food you're allowed to eat, even if you're sick, that we discussed last week. Skip to the last line. So this, we're going to read it, but we're going to not actually discuss it now. We're going to skip over it until a different time. He says, "V'dafka mi sheyesh lo mechush bi'alma who mitchazik v'olich kebari." The isra of refuah is mainly for somebody who is who has minor ailments, but he basically functions as a normal person. Avalim ein lo shum mechush, but if he has no illness whatsoever, then it's mutter. Okay, if he's totally healthy, then it's permissible for him to take medicine. So that's something we're gonna skip over that for now. We're gonna come back to that at some later point. That's a little bit
minor. Minor ailments, mechush bi'alma.
Yeah, mechush bi'alma is the definition for minor ailments. In this case right now, again, we're skipping this now, but he says that if you have no ailment, that is permissible. That is a bit of a discussion, what that means and how that applies practically. So that's what we're going to skip it for now. We're going to come back to that, I think, at the very end, after we do either next week's shiur or the week afterwards. Then the Rama says, V'chein im nafal mishkav shari. Just in addition to the case where somebody who's not sick is permissible to take medicine, whatever that means, the Ramah says that if you fall down, you have to lie down, so it's also permissible. What does he mean by that? So think about what the symbolism is of lying down. What does it mean, nafal mishkav? It means if you're lying down, are you sick? Probably. Meaning, in this context, what would you think? Probably means you're sick. Let's take a look here.
Or tired.
Yeah. Okay, so in this case, the Ramah definitely does not mean that you're tired. That's for sure not what he means here. Basically, what he's talking about here is somebody who is sick enough that they can't function normally, standing up and walking around like they usually do. Basically, they feel forced to lie down in bed. Okay. Question is going to be, how do we define this category, which we'll get back to. But that's his terminology. Enough on the mishkav. Okay. If you are sick enough that you have to go to bed, so then you're allowed to take medicine.
Wow.
Okay. That's the answer for all the medicines, whatever, and Akamol and creams and creams again is a bit of a different discussion actually, because creams also has an element of nimareach. You can't spread it on your skin, so creams will leave out for now. But in terms of medicine, you're allowed to take any medicine that you want. That's the Ramah.
We'll get to it, I'm sure. But what if you take the medicine and you don't need to be in bed? And as soon as the medicine wears off, you need to be back in bed.
Right. Okay. So that will pass the medicine. Fine.
Need to
right.
Be in bed. You take it before you go to bed, but if you didn't take it, you probably wouldn't.
Right. So when we get to the Shir Shas Kilcha, so we'll try to flesh that out. That's part of the question.
Is there a preventative? Is that what
you think? No, you're talking about regular medicine.
You're sick enough, you're going to go to bed. As soon as I take the medicine, 5 minutes later, whatever, I feel better. And so I get out of bed, I'm walking around.
Right.
Here it comes again. Do I have to wait till I get back in bed?
Right.
I mean, how?
I can't get out of bed.
Right. What's in that? I feel better. Once I take the medicine, I'm able to function.
Well, right.
That I can't.
Right. Good. So that's what we have to. That's going to be what we have to flesh out. Mm-hmm. How do you define this case of Nafal Mishkav exactly? Before we define that, there's one more category that we have to figure out, and that if you jump back to Seif Yud Zayin, which is a long Seif, and we will have to get back to this at some point before the end of tonight, but we're going to start with just one line here.
Yud
Zayin.
Yeah. Sure.
Perfect.
You got it? Okay, so he says here, Chola Shenafal Machman Chol Yod Mishkav. Okay, basically our case is somebody who's sick, who falls down, literally falls down because of his illness into lying down, which basically means he has to go to bed. Okay, the Ein Bo Sakana, it's not dangerous. So that's the category he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And then the Ramah adds in an additional example of that category. Haga, Oshiesh Lo Mecho Shemit Star of a Chol Mena Kol Gufo. Or if you have an ailment which causes you pain, and your whole body is sick. Sha'az. The other way a little bit, but anyway, so basically these are the two categories again, confined to bed or cholakol gufo, somebody whose body basically feels sick even though you're functioning normally, meaning you're walking around, you're going to shul, you're eating with your family, but you feel terrible. Okay, your whole body aches. It's not just like your head hurts or your arm hurts or your ear hurts, like your whole body, like you're out of it. Okay, you're feeling like you have no energy, you're totally drained in a not usual way, not just because you're tired and it's time to go to sleep, but because you're sick. So both those are included in this category. Question is, again, practically speaking, how does that get defined? How severe does it have to be? What are we referring to here?
So you're repelling the gezerah that we spoke
about. Yeah, Chazal obviously relaxed the gezerah that they made in a case where you're seriously ill. Okay, they felt that in that case, we're going to be nice to you because you're not feeling well, significantly not feeling well, not just minor ailment. Mm-hmm. So they relax the gezerah and say, in this case, we'll be nice to you and let it go. Which kind of Chazal could do because they made the gezerah in the first place. Okay, they have that power. Mm-hmm. They could decide when they want to impose it, when they want to get rid of it. So, based on that, tissue by any chance? I forgot to bring more, but I forgot to bring more. I should have brought a whole package of tissues. I went out today, I brought a whole package of tissues with me. It's like I need like 20 of them. Thank you very much. Sorry. Okay. So let's, before we go back to the rest of the Shulchan Aruch here, the Shulchan Aruch basically goes through all the rest of the halachos that don't have to do with medicine. It has to do with, can you ask a non-Jew, stuff like that. We'll come back to that a little later. It's not nearly as relevant for us here in Eretz Yisrael, but it's good to know what the rules are, or at least what the opinions are. So we'll come back to that. Just to get a better sense of what exactly, or who exactly Achol Shein Bo Sakana is, I think the Shmir Shalos Kilchas is the best place to look. So I actually brought my other copy here. Take a look at this. Basically, it's Perek Lamed Gimel in Shmir Shalos Kilchas. And what he does here at the very beginning, I think yours, even though I have the new version, that's the old version, I think they're basically the same, more or less.
Say it again, where are we?
Where I opened it for you. Perakwam Gimel. Sif Alef. Halach Alef. So what he does here basically is he goes through eight different examples of people that are included in the category of Choloshein Mosakana. So let's see what he says. He says like this. L'Choloshein Mosakana Nechshav. These are the people that are considered to be Choloshein Mosakana. Number one. By the way, I should just define here that everything he's going to say also may not be 100% clear. It'll be clearer than we've seen so far because he's giving you practical guidelines, but they still need some further fleshing out. So we'll...
And this is the level after Mechosh Baum?
Correct, yeah.
It's like level two.
Yeah. Okay. So number one is Mishanafal Mishkav Machad Cholyo. Somebody basically has to lie down. Okay. He doesn't say exactly what that means, but I'll tell you what I think it means. You could disagree, but... I think what he means is somebody who basically feels they don't have to, maybe they have to lie down, but basically the main point is that they're functioning in such a weakened or lessened state that they feel they really can't stay on their feet. Okay? So they have to lie down, not because they're a little tired, not because they need a nap, not because they, you know, they'll be fine when they take a rest in another hour, when they wake up in another hour. Basically, they need to stay in bed for half the day. Okay? If you're sick with a serious illness, with a fever and whatever else, basically you don't really feel like getting out of bed. So that's probably what this category has in mind. Okay? That's what I understand based on what they say. Okay? Which again, is not just your regular illness, or even if you're a more severe illness, that's probably a more severe type of fever or flu or something like that, where you're really basically in bed half the day. Okay? However, there's more categories here. Let's see what the next ones are. Bet. Hasovil mi'chol l'mala mi'haragil etzlo. Okay, somebody who has a fever, more than you usually do, which again, we can define. We'll see in a second what the definition might be. He says, v'afil l'mafal mishkav. Even if you are, you're not lying down, meaning you're not confined to bed all day. You're walking around, you're around the house, but you have a fever. Okay. Aval karagil en yosim petach habayit machmat nachalazu. However, okay, most people, when they have such a fever, the parent, if it's a child, or even the parent themselves, say, don't leave home. Okay, don't go to work, don't go to shul, don't go out. Okay, even if you're walking around, but you're walking around with your slippers or whatever, but half your pajamas, and you're lying on the couch, you're sitting, maybe you're at the table with your family on Shabbos, but it's not a normal Shabbos. Okay, you wouldn't go out, unless you absolutely had to go out, you wouldn't go out. For that reason. And that, by the way, is based on the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay, if you look at the footnote here. The Aruch HaShulchan basically has a line here where he describes this idea of Choloshein Mosakana as somebody who is not specifically confined to bed, but somebody also who basically is confined to their house. Same idea, meaning they're confined to their house because they wouldn't go out normally unless they really had to on this, based on, you know, based on this concern. So somebody called me last week or 2 weeks ago and asked me about some sort of sinus issue about taking medicine on Shabbos. So they thought maybe it was fine because it was a liquid. I said, liquid doesn't really matter. It's, you know, anything, with, you know, most illnesses are included regardless of whether it's actually a, you know, a powder substance that you would crush. That's just the zero was, which is what we discussed. But I said, you know, how sick are you? Are you sick enough that you wouldn't go out of you wouldn't be able to go to shul, you wouldn't go out of your house? And she's like, well, you know, I would never ever say that because I can't not function because we're having guests and we're like, kids have this and we have to do this and this and this, you know. I'm like, okay, fine. What am I going to tell you? What I said basically, if you had an important event to go to outside your house that you felt that you had to go, you felt like you either really, really wanted to go or you felt you really, really needed to go to, and, you know, you were sick, are you sick enough that you would decide not to go to that event? Mm. Honestly. So I think that question, she said that she probably would still go. But that would be, in my mind, that's a good barometer of how you would decide whether you're included or not. Okay, not just because, oh, I feel like staying home. You know, it's not like that. It means if you had somewhere really important to go, and you really wanted to go, or you really needed to go, but you just couldn't go because you were sick. Yeah. Okay, not you had to go to a relative's wedding, and even if you have 103 fever, you're going to go. You know, that's not what we mean. We mean that, you know, a regular case where you can get out of it if you need to, but you really, really want to go, you really, really need to be there, ideally. Or even let's say you wouldn't go to work, okay? If you don't go to work, you normally go to work. You don't just skip work for no reason, but, you know, but you're sick enough that if you were sick enough to not go to work, you know, that type of sickness also probably is sufficient to say that you're included in this category of the Aruch HaShulchan of not leaving your house and you can take medicine on Shabbos.
Robert, you said liquids. I thought you said last week liquids that are exclusively used for medicine would be asur.
That's what I was saying to her. I mean, the reason she was asking the question is because she thought maybe you would say that materials or items that are not subject to a question of grinding would not be included as medicine. So I said that's not the case. Most posts can hold that anything which you could find some sort of medicine to use for it, that would be ground, being a pill of any sort, even if you're using a spray or whatever, right, something else, a cream, you know, or lotion or drops or whatever, let's say. So it's still ulcer. That's generally the rule. Again, how we get to that point is a little bit unclear. In the Shulchan Aruch, we didn't go into this. So there's a few contradictory cases in the Shulchan Aruch. One case where they say it's okay because you don't usually grind, and another case where they say it's not okay even though you don't usually grind. So they try to figure out like what's going on there. Basically, the conclusion seems to be this point, that as long as the illness is such that one could conceivably use grinding-based medicine, such as pills, mm-hmm, then you're not allowed to take medicine even if you're not using the medicine, even if you're using a drop or a liquid or, you know, some other type of thing like that. If it's something which nobody would ever use a pill or other grinding-based form, mm-hmm, of medicine in order to cure, that's never a normal cure for that, so then it actually might be permissible to use that medicine on Shabbos. But that's not so true today, because most things today have pills that you could use, even if you wouldn't use it, but it could be used. Mm-hmm. If you would ask a doctor or a pharmacist, most things today would have. Again, if you want to think about examples of cases that don't fit that, they might be permissible. Mm-hmm. But that's in most cases would be included. That's usually how it comes out. L'halacha. That, by the way, is mentioned in the Shmir Shas Kilchasa footnote 5 of Parak Bam and Dalad. I don't know. I thought we read it last week. Maybe not. Anyways, that's what he said about that. Let's go back to this now. Over here, we're up to Gimel now. Okay, first, we basically had somebody who's confined to bed. Second, we had somebody who has a fever. And because he has a fever or anything else which is like a fever, you won't leave your house. Three, okay, your whole body is weakened. This is what we saw before in the Ramah. Even if you're not confined to bed, but your whole body is aching. Kagon hasovu migraina. Okay, that's of course a migraine headache. If you have a bad migraine headache that's affecting you, your whole body feels terrible. Even if you're walking around and you're not lying down the whole time, that's sick enough also that you can take medicine for that according to everybody. All right. That's Gimel. Dalid. Hamithalech kibari, somebody who walks like somebody who's healthy. But he could be, you know, confined to bed or have some other serious issue if he does not get his care or medicine or whatever when he's supposed to. Even if it's not dangerous. Kigon cholak katseret, asthma. You know what that is, right? Okay, that's asthma. Okay, so even if it's not life-threatening asthma, but asthma that, if it's not treated, could conceivably, again, you have to figure out exactly how this would work, but let's say you would be sick, okay? Or let's say you'd be coughing a lot or breathing in such a way which you can't function normally. Again, usually that also may involve potential, you know, somewhat of a potential danger, but even if you know already from your doctor or whatever, your case is not that serious. But it's serious enough that would be, you know, not good for you. Then that would also be included, even if right now you're fine. Okay, but the point is, in that case, you could take your pill, whatever you take for asthma on Shabbos. That would be permissible. Same thing for sakeret or delicate prakim. Okay, some sort of infection. Or sakeret, which is blood sugar problems, right? Is it? What did you say? Sakeret. See what he says in Dalad here?
Diabetes?
Yeah, I think it's is it diabetes? Is that the word they use in Hebrew? Sakeret definitely is blood sugar problems. I think maybe that's what it means. Yeah, do you remember? You're the doctor. I think so. I think you're right. Dalad?
Dalad. Yes, sakeret is diabetes.
Yeah, okay, fine. So that's what it means there. So these things, even if they're not life-threatening, but even if you're fine right now, but if you are not getting the treatment that you're supposed to, you're going to have problems. So then it's also permissible to take your medicine on Shabbos. Mm. Okay, that's Dalad. Hey, Nishikai with Etzlo Sakarat Eiver. Okay, somebody who has danger to a limb. Now, this is not as common today. This really needs more discussion, but I don't know if we're going to give it, because it doesn't, thank God, it doesn't happen that often. Somebody has danger to a limb. In a case where it's clear that you're not going to have any danger to your life. Okay, if you have a broken bone, which is not open, meaning it's not subject to infection, in your finger, something like that. There's no danger to life. If you wait until after Shabbos to get it fixed, not fixed, so you get it treated.
You break your finger on Shabbos, can be.
Yeah.
You have to wait.
Correct. Okay. Again, you have to check with a doctor because some cases of breakage or fracture are more dangerous if you don't, you know, if you don't treat it within a couple hours. Mm-hmm. So it could be more problematic. Not necessarily in terms of either in terms of how it heals, or more, I guess probably more significantly in terms of infection. Okay, for children certainly, if it's subject to infection, then already most doctors will tell you that that's enough of a chance that you don't want to take, that you should go get it treated right away. Which again depends on what you need to do. Sometimes they can temporarily take care of it on Shabbos. You just go to any, you know, doctor here. Mm-hmm. That's nice enough to do that. There, we won't mention names now, but there are a few doctors on the issue that are nice enough to take your patients on Shabbos if you need to in an emergency situation. If you know who they are, I'll tell you afterwards. But again, a lot of these things you can take on Shabbos. You can, they can put them like this, you know, cast, you know, stuff like that, which you don't have to go to the doctor on Shabbos. But whatever would be necessary in terms of medicinal type of things, that would be permissible to do on Shabbos as well. So he says, yeah. So, but again, you know, all those things have to. He says here, if the doctor says we're not worried that it's going to get worse on Shabbos, then you can wait until, you should wait until after Shabbos. Again, you have to be careful because sakanat aver, if there's usually a danger to limb. Again, this is a whole discussion of the Shulchan Aruch, what the halachic status is, but basically. Again, we'll have to, maybe we'll come back to this. Yeah, basically today it's not so common because today most dangers to limb that we have are usually also danger to the rest of the body. Mm-hmm. And because of infection, today they say most of the time that any type of time that your ear is in danger or God forbid your arm is in danger because whatever happened to it, your blood, whatever it is, they usually say that the infection can spread and therefore it's mamish sakanas nefashos. There's no question. Do whatever you have to do. Get to the hospital. Whatever it is. Vav hasuvah midalekat einayim. Certain kinds of eye infections also could be included, which he's going to discuss later. Which again, it depends on what it is. Okay, if it's just a regular thing, maybe not. It also depends on how severe it is. Talking about certain kinds of infections like that. But that's that. And then Zion is a Yoleda, okay, a woman who gives birth. From the 8th day of the Yoleda, from when she gives birth, until 30 days afterwards. That whole period of time, from the 8th day until the 30th day, she has the status of a Choloshim Mosakana, and you can also be lenient in terms of medicine for sure during that time.
Before the 8th day, she's higher level.
Correct. Before the 8th day, she's still Choloshim Mosakana. And you can do even more things for her if she needs it. And the last one, Ched is Yelad Katan, okay, a Katan basically, a young child. So he's always considered to be a Choloshim Mosakana, regardless of what the situation is. And you could also give the medicine whenever you need. The question is going to be, what is defined as a Yelad Katan, meaning how young is a young child? Is a 10-year-old young child? Is a 7-year-old young child? A 4-year-old? Where do you draw the line? Yeah. So he talks about that, but not in this parak. Okay, that's in parak Lam Zion. So we'll have to make a mention of that at some point, but I don't know if we'll get to it today. It's machlokas aposkim. You'll have to see, but it's aposkim to disagree about exactly what age is included in the heter for a katan. Okay, any comments so far before we go on here? Any questions about exactly who's included? Meaning, again, this is a very, very broad general list, which is a comprehensive general list, but it's still a bit of a general list in terms of who's included. But again, as we said, you know, most times for most regular ailments, it just depends on how ill you are. If you're, you know, if you feel like you can't function normally, so then not just because it's like me right now, it's hard, you know, I'm a little cold, but I can manage. I'm still going to go to shul. I'm still going to go out. I'm still going to do what I need to do, even though it's a little bit harder for you. That's not included. It means that you really have to lie down. You can't, everything we said before. Let me add in also one or two other categories, which he doesn't mention here, which are somebody, I guess, this is what a lot of the poskim say based on a few rishonim, which we're not going to go into, but just so you're aware of the question. It's interesting. What they define as Choloshim Mosakana is anybody who part of their body or some of their limbs are not functioning properly. So based on that, you could have the following points. Meaning, let's say, I'll give you two types of examples. Number one, God forbid, if you have a case of infertility where somebody's having trouble conceiving and they need to go through infertility treatments, which involve doing certain things on Shabbos. What is the status? Can they take medications on Shabbos? Ovulation types of stuff? All sorts of things that there's questions about. Or even ask a non-Jew to do something for you and go to the lab. That's usually more in chutzlars than here. So many poskim, though not all, many poskim say that in that case, infertility actually has a status of a person who's a choloshim mosakana. Why is that? They're functioning perfectly fine. They're walking around. They're healthy. Everything is great, right? They might be a little sad, but, you know. So what many poskim say is that because their reproductive organs are not functioning the way they're supposed to, that gives them the status of a chol hashem bo sakana. And therefore, they would be allowed to take whatever medication is related to that situation in order not to conceive. It's a bit of a chiddush, but it makes sense, right? If you define it, the chol hashem bo sakana in that way, that's a limb which is not functioning properly. So, again, it can't be just any limb, but it's a limb which affects your whole conduct, which, again, you're not lying down, but it certainly affects you, okay? I mean, it affects your ability to do a major part of your life, to have kids, and also, keep in mind also the people that are, you know, that have problems with infertility often have a lot of other issues also together with it. It's emotionally very difficult. It's often something they think about all the time. It makes them very sad. They may have been depressed or whatever else. That's also a consideration. That's what many poskim say. It's a bit of a chiddush, but that's what they say. Some, again, others disagree, but that's what enough poskim say. That's an interesting point. In addition to that, there's also a question of psychological illness. That also may be included. If you're psychologically ill, then also you could argue that you're not functioning normally. If your brain is not functioning normally or something else, and there may be room to allow certain types of medications. Okay, which again, think about a person who has, you know, certain kinds of illnesses. For either depression or schizophrenia or any of these kind of things, even something a little less than that, manic depression, that needs to take medication for it. Can you take medication for those things on Shabbos? Real question. So most poskim would say that, again, I see a quote inside exactly, I don't know if your Shabbos talks about it, but the general consensus of the poskim, most poskim, is that it's mutter. Why? Because again, same idea, that will seriously affect your whole functioning if you're not taking your medication properly for somebody who has, you know, a state like that, which is, you know, somewhat serious. So that's
Lichvod Purim Katan, when someone gets drunk on Shabbos, and then like they like can't stand up, they get out of bed, they feel like they're going to throw up or whatever it may be, can they take Akamol?
I guess would that help them? Is that supposed to be helpful in that situation?
I think so.
Tell me, I don't know. I don't know.
I honestly don't know. Like, I don't know, but I'm assuming that if you're not, I don't know, I think it could be a possibility.
Okay, again, I don't know.
Let's say it is, under the assumption that it is, that you have a headache, you woke up, you had an early lunch, you had some wine, you got drunk from it, and then you wake up from your nap, it's still Shabbos, excuse me.
You feel like a terrible hangover?
And you feel like a terrible hangover and headache. And
so put it this way, the stomach,
I guess the question is not less about the drunk, that it's self-inflicted in a sense.
Correct. So I think at the end of the day, we would still say that it's probably permissible once you're in the state that you're allowed to do it, but basically it's, one should be warned that you should not bring yourself to that state on Shabbos when it's not Purim, and Purim doesn't fall on Shabbos, so you don't have an excuse except for in your Shalim, and there the mitzvah of drinking is not on Shabbos, so it's on Sunday. So there's no excuse, basically. Meaning, you know, you could drink a little bit. There's a mitzvah to drink a little bit of wine. But to get drunk in that way on Shabbos, there's really no excuse, and basically you've abused the Kedusha of Shabbos for your own personal purposes, which is absolutely not appropriate.
Right. Another example maybe would be like, you're running around so much outside and it's a hot day, it's also not appropriate to run around like that on Shabbos.
Right.
And you get home and you feel so faint and you're like, you know. Yeah.
So again, you should drink, but whatever else you need to do in order to avoid dehydration, whatever, absolutely, that's for sure winter. That's no question about it. But again, you need to shut it away. You shouldn't be running around for sure.
Right.
And there's also a question of whether you're allowed to run in a way which causes you to sweat on Shabbos. That, I don't know if we'll get to that at some point, but there is a question that you're basically, the halacha is that you're not really supposed to cause yourself to sweat on Shabbos. Sweating is considered to be a form of exercise, which may also have something to do with refuah, which again needs a little more discussion to flesh it out. But the bottom line is that generally you're not supposed to do that. So if you run an oil and cause you to sweat, that's not great. If you just walk outside and it's 120 degrees and you just walk, there's nothing you can do about it. But to bring yourself to that point by specifically running quickly generally should be avoided. And anyway, we say that the way you walk on Shabbos is different than during the week. Say my idea is hilu chachtehe b'Shabbos with a karlash. It's not a gemara that the way you walk on Shabbos is not supposed to be the same way you walk during the week. You're not supposed to run, except maybe the shul. Maybe shul is different. But other than that, you're not supposed to run anyway. So regardless of the question of sweating, that shouldn't be done. So anyway, you could. This is a very broad category of chol hashem bo sakana. There's a lot of cases which might be included in this category, but again, you try not to bring yourself to that situation. Okay. Let's see here what else we can find that's relevant here. There's a lot of interesting examples which are relevant here. So I think what we'll do now, I don't think we're going to get very far here, so maybe we'll continue this next week. I'll tell you first, before we get to the other examples of things you can do, let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch very briefly. in terms of asking a non-Jew, just so we know we're clear about this here. Same case as before, Sif Yud Zayin. So he says here, all right.
Sif Yud.
Yud Zayin, the same way we looked at before. Where it said, Chol Shenofal Machmat Chol Yod Mishkav, Vein Bo Sakana. Okay, so that's our case. So skip the Ramah now. And the next line in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Orim Leila Yehudi, Masolo Refuah. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do some sort of tipul, some sort of care for you, whatever is needed. You can't be Mechal Shabbos with an Isur Doraisa. So this, by the way, there's a whole machlokas, and there's like four different opinions in the Shulchan Aruch here about some of these points. Which is why it's a little confusing, because we only follow the third one. So maybe we'll just read the third one. But the first line we just read is correct. So I mean, everybody agrees that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew, if possible or if relevant, to help you with some sort of thing on Shabbos if you're sick of a cholish and mosakar nature. So again, here in Israel, it's not as common because we don't have so many goyim here that work. In some places they do. They have a Shabbos goy in some of the Haredi communities. Here in Yavid Yemen, we don't really... I mean, we have one or two non-Jews that are around, but they're not specifically available for that purpose. You have to feel bad when you go and ask them. That if you wanted to, so again, they can do whatever you need for them. They can turn off the light for you. They can cook something for you if you need. Again, you have to figure out what would be helpful. But if there is something that they would be helpful for, so you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do whatever you want. You can do an Isur Darabanan, Isur Daraisa. Anything is permissible.
Wow, they could actually cook something for you.
Yeah, again, usually that's not really necessary or helpful. But if it would be, and that would be what you need, then it would be permissible.
Mm.
Okay, that's what he says here. There's a whole discussion also about Sakanat Aver, which I don't think we're going to get into, but Homachlok is Sakanat Aver, with the case of the danger to a limb. Is it considered to be like a danger to your life? Is it considered like Choloshevo Sakana? Is it somewhere in the middle? It's a big, big machlokas about that. But again, as I mentioned before, so basically, most cases today, Sakanat Aver is really danger to life, because most limbs that are in danger means that there's danger of infection to the body, and most doctors will tell you that you have to go to the hospital and do whatever you need to do. There's no shiloh of what you should do. Go drive, do whatever, Mechal Shabbos, Doraisa, whatever is necessary to do it. Okay, so that's the other example here. The question is, what examples, how does this play itself out? So the Shmir Shabbos has a lot of interesting cases here, which again, a lot of them are not so practical for us, but we can take a look at a few of them, and then we'll continue next week. I'll put together a couple more things to look at next week. If you take a look here, again, it's not so common for us, but if you want to see, so he says like this. Let's get to some of the principles here. Look at Halacha Bet in the Shmir Shaskan Chazit. He says, Chol she'en lo sakana, im ein esher la'asod et hanachus li'rifotoa yedei yehudi beheter. Okay, if it's not possible to do whatever you need to be done by a Jew in a permissible way, so he says, Osin lo et hakol nachut la'yedei nachri. Okay, everything that he needs can be done by a non-Jew. Meaning, if you can't get a Jew to do it in a permissible way, so you can ask a non-Jew to do it, even if it's in a forbidden way. Even if it's something which is asur min haTorah, is still, you can ask a non-Jew. As long as you need it on Shabbos, a little tzarach mitzvah Shabbos, and not mitzvah Shabbos. But a Jew can't be mechal Shabbos for this type of illness with an issur d'oraisa. I mean, a Jew can't do that. Even if it's a case of a limb, which we said before, we discussed that already. As long as you're sure that there won't be danger to the rest of the body, which again we said before is not so common, but in that case, a Jew definitely cannot be mechal Shabbos mid'oraisa, meaning a Torah prohibition. You can't do a malacha d'oraisa even with a shinoi. Different than the way you do it during the week. There are some that disagree about that point, but it seems that it's better to be machmir if you're talking about an actual isur d'oraisa. It's better not to get involved with trying to do it with a shinoi if you can help it. And he has other things here. He's got a lot of fun. I want to get to some of the basic cases. Let's read the Halacha Gimel. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more here, but he says, "Lafichah asur b'nisal b'mechonit liknot trufot." Again, I don't know how common this is for us here, but let's say you had to get medicine or medication for a cholish in mosakana, and you can find a pharmacy that's open or whatever. Can you drive to get there? So a Jew can't drive to get there. Again, you can see this being more relevant in chutzpah, where it's a little easier. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's a little hard to do this. Or letzorech achola, a Jew cannot turn on and off the light because that is included at least as an Isur Darabanan, maybe even Isur Daraisa. You can't do tzibumim, x-rays, geves, a cast, all these kinds of things. Okay, if the doctor doesn't say that you have to because of danger, you can't do all these things. These are all connected to an Isur Torah. And also, you can't call a doctor to try to get instructions on what to do. So again, that's not so practical here, because in Israel you can't reach your doctor anyway. Even when you want to reach your doctor during the week, it's impossible to reach them. But again, luckily we have here a few doctors that you can talk to. And again, there are some that we're happy to help you if you need help on Shabbos, if you need to go to them. So you just walk to their house and talk to them. We've done it before when we needed to, and other people have done it also. So that's something that you can do. Okay, fine. So again, there are a lot of these other things about what happens if you don't have a medication. Can you go to the pharmacy and pay for it with somebody else, with a non-Jew paying for it? Again, it's not really so practical for us here, but in Chutz La'aretz, these things are very practical. If there's something you can get and ask your non-Jewish neighbor to go for you to the pharmacy, or you go there and try to get it on credit, which maybe they'll do if they know you, maybe it'll be nice. So that may be very relevant here, so you have to find other ways to do it. Find somebody that already has it, or doctors that have stuff, stuff like that. Okay, there's plenty more stuff here. I think what I'll do, maybe we'll stop for now. And what I'll try to do for next week is try to condense for you some of the cases that I think are the most practical, meaning we'll talk a little bit about some of the medication. We'll talk a little bit about antibiotics. Is a big question. Can you take antibiotics, antibiotic medicine on Shabbos? Mm-hmm. That's a big discussion. What do you do a little bit in terms of broken bones or sprains and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Basically, what I can tell you for now... is the following. I have this great book here, which is in English actually, which goes through every single type of illness. It's called The Halachos of Refua on Shabbos. It's by Rabbi Bodner, who's the same one who wrote a number of other books. He wrote the book on Muktzah, he wrote a book on Brachos, he wrote a book on Money from Lakewood, published by Feldheim. This one is together with a doctor, with Rabbi Dr. Daniel Roth. And basically, it's an amazing book. It's really, really helpful. What he does, basically, in the first part, is he goes through different categories of illnesses, as we spoke about, and he gives you a bunch of examples. So the first one, he talks about mechush. Okay, he talked about light illnesses, and he tells you exactly what the halachas are, that you can't mechal Shabbos, you can't take medicine, and he gives you all the examples of medicines you can't take. He talks about all the other things you can't do. You can't use ice or cold water or cold compresses or any of these kind of things, really, which are clearly clearly medicinal in nature. So those would be not allowed in those cases. He talks about other examples which we didn't get to yet, but we'll talk about it a little later. Sleeping pills, caffeine pills, stuff like that. Mouthwash, those things are permissible.
And so those are.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll get to it. It just might take a few weeks, and we have to decide how long we want to spend on this. That's in the category of something which is maybe somebody who's not sick. So we'll have to talk about that at the end.
So what did you say about ice?
Again, we'll have to get to it. If I don't know how much time we're going to have. We have to decide how much time we want to spend on this. If you want to spend another 2 months on this, we can go through everything in very, very in detail. If not, we can try to do a summary of this book in a certain form. He gives you all the examples of what's included as a Mechush B'Alma. Again, I can just read this to you, but you can look at it yourself if you want, but I'll just read you some of the stuff that's here. For Mechush B'Alma, we spoke already last week about this, about cold and cough and stuff like that. So he mentions allergies such as hay fever, digestion problem, constipation, ear problems, which are light, fungal infections, headaches, insomnia, joint pain such as arthritis, muscle aches, skin problems like acne, blisters, chapped hands, minor toothaches, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, all these kind of things are minor ailments. They're mechush, so you can't take medicine for them. Okay. He gives the other stuff here. Then he goes to the next example of our case of Cholash Eimbo Sakana. And basically says... He's got more stuff here. Okay, he goes through all the different... Everything I just told you, he gives a lot of examples about it. I'm sorry, did I say before about ice? He says ice is permissible. I don't know why he was writing that ice is not. Really? Ice is permissible. Cold water is also permissible. What did I say before?
No.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it. But those are things that are, could be used by other people. So that is fine. Again, he goes through... He's got a whole example here. Chapter 2, he talks about Cholash Eimbo Sakana. He gives all the examples here. Basically, he gives you all the rules that we spoke about already. About injections and medications and asking a non-Jew. He gives all these examples, all the things here. He gives a few other examples I'll just throw out here. He talks about a severe fungal infection, okay, or painful arthritis flare-up. Mm. That would be included in the case of somebody who's cholakol gufo, that he would be allowed to take medicine, even though he's not confined to bed. Okay. He mentions here also about the psychological disorder that I mentioned to you before. Okay, so he mentions that's also
that's point. Like if you get like poison ivy,
yeah,
something you can do.
Yeah,
this whole group.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's irrelevant.
Yeah, he quotes here of Nissen Carell. It's about the question of the psychological disorder. The example we give of that, somebody whose condition might worsen if you don't give him treatment. He mentions that also. Yeah, there's more examples. He goes through all the discussions here about it's allowed, etc., 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 etc. The last one we didn't get to yet. Chol sheish bo sakana. Anyway, after that, and then he talks about sakana's either. Okay, what's included in the limb at risk? So again, we're not going to go into this now. Basically, he says the cases of limbs at risk could include arm, leg, ear, eye, and tooth. He tells you what's okay about them. But again, he says that he mentions what we said before also about potential dangers to life because of infection would not, you know, is permissible completely. But it gives you a bunch of examples here of things which would be sakanas aver. Okay, a fracture of the arm, leg, finger, or toe, that would be a sakanas aver, which again allows certain things but not other things. It means a Jew can't really do an iser d'oraisa to cure it, but again, you have to decide what's an iser d'oraisa to put it back in, to put a cast on. Some things are iser d'oraisa, some things are not. It's a little bit complicated. Yeah. So again, we're not going to all this now. But he says right here, that I'll read you what it says. A fracture of finger, toe, arm, or leg of a healthy person would not necessarily cause permanent damage or loss of functionality of the injured limb. However, in some instances, because of the nature of the fracture, a delay in treatment could put the limb at risk, such as a bone in the leg, as we said before, might not set properly and may result in a permanent limb. A bone in the hand might not set properly and may result in a permanent stiff finger. Other cases like an open fracture, we also mentioned this before, also risk of infection, so that's sakana. Because it is very difficult for anyone other than a medical professional to correctly assess the risk, it is preferable to have a non-Jew provide transportation to the hospital, or in our case, at least you should bring it to the doctor and gabbage him in first and have a look at it before you decide what to do afterwards, whether you go to the hospital or not. It should be checked out here. And again, some things you could wait till after Shabbos to do. It gives a few examples of other serious injuries: upper leg, elbow, open break, severed finger or toe, and I think that's all obvious to us. Those things would be sakana, but just in case you couldn't figure that out, he has a few other examples also here about other cases, which I'm not going to go into now, but again, very, very interesting and very, very important. And then afterwards, he basically has a whole index here of all sorts of different illnesses and what their status is. Okay, a whole index. And each one, you know, he's got like 200 in here. Each one, basically, what he does is he tells you, number one, what exactly it is, what the condition is, so you understand what you're dealing with. Number two, he tells you what category it's in. Okay, is it a mechosh? Is it a cholosh eibo sakana? Is it cholosh eishbo sakana? And he tells you exactly what you are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Wow. Okay, it's fantastic.
Maybe we should never have to use it.
Yeah, we should never have to use it, but it's very, very helpful if you need it for a quick reference that you don't have time to go asking around or figuring things out, and just to know what you do. You know, I look at this book, hopefully not too often, but I definitely used it as reference in the past. Maybe we'll go through a couple other examples next week of things that are chol sheibo sakana. But again, it's really, really, really helpful. Highly, highly recommended. Because again, both the halacha, but also because of the medical aspects which are provided by the doctor that was involved, and also I think Rabbi Bader's wife is a nurse in the hospital, so she also has some stuff. Yeah, anyway, so that's the story with that. Okay. So let's take the last 5 minutes. We'll one idea about Shabbos, machshava idea about Shabbos, and then we'll throw in one or two important ideas. We'll throw that in. Okay, so there's a nice quote here that I have in our book that we our curriculum book that we wrote for high schools from the Bnei Sassar about Shabbos, which is related to the concept of Tosefta Shabbos, sort of. So he says the following. He says, "Hine gam anachnu am hakodesh." Okay, we are the holy nation. We do the mitzvot not just because we have to, but we do the mitzvot with extra love. Okay, I mean, we do it because we really love God and we want to do the right thing. The way that we know, or that people can see, that we have this extra love is by virtue of the fact that we don't do the mitzvot in a burdensome way. We don't do it in a way which is, I don't like this, I'm going to just get over with as fast as I can. That's not how we do mitzvos. We always want to add more. Meaning you want to do it. If your father wants something, then not only do you do just what you have to do, you do what he wants you to do, even if he doesn't spell it out. So that's the idea. If we always want to add more, so that's the showing of love, and the showing that we want to do the mitzvah b'chiba yisera. And he says at the end, Taskil v'teidak gam ke'ir tosefa Shabbos. This is one of his mamorim on Shabbos here. He says, this is the idea of tosefa Shabbos. What is tosefa Shabbos? We haven't spoken about that here, but basically, if you know, tosefa Shabbos is the mitzvah that you're supposed to start Shabbos a few minutes early before Shabbos actually begins. Mm. Okay? If Shkia is whatever time Shkia is, 5:30, so those that light candles at home, light candles 20 minutes beforehand, that fulfills your tosefa Shabbos. That's perfect. Mm. In Shul, it's a little bit more complicated, because in Shul, you have to make sure that you finish Mincha with a few minutes before Shkia, which is not always so simple. It actually requires a 10-minute discussion of its own. But I guess the bottom line would be that if you see Shkia is coming, and you're not done davening yet, so you should always be mekabel tosefa Shabbos at least like 2 or 3 minutes before Shkia. So at least if you're done with Shmon Esrei, even if the chazan is still davening, you know, Shmon Esrei, have in your mind, I'm accepting upon myself the Kedusha of Shabbos now, a few weeks before. It's actually a big mitzvah. Some say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Many people hold it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, actually. And it's actually a problem, because when mincha starts a little bit late, and you know, it takes 15 minutes, and mincha's over at Shkia, you missed out on the Kedusha of Shabbos, you missed out on a big mitzvah, a very important mitzvah. That's a very, very important halacha to be aware of. Very, very important. So anyway, so what he's saying here is the idea of tosefa Shabbos, understood in this way, is that because we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much and we love Shabbos so much, we show that we love it by adding to Shabbos and say we want more. We want more Shabbos. We want to start 20 minutes early, even 5 minutes early, to show that we love the idea of Shabbos so much that we have to have, we're going to add on a little bit of our own, even if we're not required. Now, yes, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, maybe even midoraisa, but the point is that it is understanding we, by doing tosefa Shabbos in a positive way, in an enthusiastic way, by showing that we want to do this, not that we have to do it, but we want to add it on. That's how we show that we love Shabbos and we have a chiba yisera for the mitzvos. So Bezer Hashem, we should be able to first be the kind of mitzvos to tosefa Shabbos, number one, and number two, we should be able to demonstrate our chiba yisera of Shabbos and showing that we want to go the extra mile for our Kadosh Baruch Hu by making sure that we start Shabbos a little bit early and end Shabbos a few minutes late, which we do anyway. That's built into the time. That's not a problem. Okay, great. That's for Shabbos. If you want to take a minute, if you want to tell us your word on what?
I'm on table.
Okay, so I'll just add in one extra point about Purim Katan. Purim Katan and Purim Gadol, I guess, also are, you know, certainly involved in the Ava Yechiba Yisera that the Bnei Chasser is talking about here. Part of Purim is the idea that we accepted the Torah again voluntarily at the time of Achashverosh, meaning Chazal say at the time of Matan Torah, we were forced in a certain sense to accept the Torah. But then after the Purim story, the Jews had so much love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they decided they would accept Torah or Torah Shebaal Peh on their own. That's what the Chazal say. And that's exactly the same idea, like showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu this extra love that we have for him, and showing that the mitzvahs are not a burden. We're not doing it because we have to do it. We're doing it because we want to do it and we love Hashem. That's a wonderful demonstration of this point. And Purim Katan, again, this is the beginning of Purim. Okay, this is not the actual Purim, but this is a little bit of a taste of Purim. And the Ramah adds off, it's the last Ramah, and the last thing in the Shulchan Aruch.
I don't know, you know it? I read it just.
All right, yeah, beautiful. Okay, the very last Ramah, the last seminar, they talk a little bit about Purim Katan. I think it's Tafresh Tzadi Vav, 696. Mm-hmm. So the very last line of the Ramah, he quotes a pasuk, and I think it's Mishlei. He says, V'tov lev mishta tamid. Okay, it's good to always have a heart full of drinking. What was Ramah talking about here? Tov lev mishta tamid? It's the last line of the Shulchan Aruch. The very last line. Why is he saying this? It's the very last line. So there's a lot of answers, a lot of interesting points, but I guess part of the point is here, and it's not a push for Breslov, but you know, part of the idea would be of lev mishta tamid, of drinking, is, again, we don't mean drinking necessarily in a negative way, too much way that you hang over, but drinking in a way which causes you to feel love and excitement. Drinking brings out a feeling of, wow, this is great. The certain simcha that you get from drinking, the simcha, I think that maybe that's what the Ramah is talking about. Getting the simcha that you get from drinking, if you drink it the right way, that simcha is something which should accompany you for your entire life. If you always have that sense of simcha, the true simcha of simchas hamitzvos and simcha of loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ideally you're supposed to get on Purim, which again some do and some don't, but assuming that you get what you're supposed to get, to always have the lane, to always have the heart of the simcha of the Mishnah, even if you're not actually drinking, that's what's great about the message of Purim. That's something the Ramah is saying we can take, you know, to apply to the entire year. I don't know if that's what Shlomo Melech meant. It's probably not what he meant in the actual pasuk in Mishlei, but that's definitely one of the ways that you can understand the Ramah. It's not, again, which parish says it, but one of the parishim says that. So Bezer Hashem, to be able to be mekayem the mitzvah of loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and showing him our extra love, but at the same time having the certain simcha that you get of for Mishnah, without the Mishnah, all the rest of the year as well.
Amen. Amen.